this week on the droids, we're one droid short of a full escape pod, but the three of us who are here are going to go through the dialogue, the ongoing talk, the back and forth, the pros and cons, all about the media storm that is The Rise of Skywalker, this week on the droids.
Bubble!
There's no life forms. Don't fire.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. I feel like we're going to get some notes from Mike about that. I'm Sam alongside Chris and Ryan. And folks, we got through the holidays. We got through the release. Yeah. We got through The Mandalorian. But we're here to talk about this conversation ain't over. It's just
first
beginning.
Off, spoiler alert for The Rise of Skywalker.
I don't think there's any possible way we could not have a spoiler-free podcast for at least a month.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that if you want, honestly, on your end, dear listener, just
which end?
you could just play this intro every time. Just assume that for the next month, we're either talking about Mando or Skywalker spoilers.
I think the statute of limitations on spoilers is up. It's been out for like 12 days.
I think the statute of limitations is up for a Star Wars podcast, which
for
we are.
For sure. If I was listening to This American Life and they were talking about Star Wars spoilers, I'd say they should have given a heads up. You know, right. Some people might be working their way to the theater.
Hey, this is no American Life, Ryan.
this is Jedi life.
Guys, we're discoursing today.
Oh, I like that.
Here's the thing, dear listeners, and Mike, I hope you're among them. You'll be happy to hear that we kind of went into this episode a little unprepared because we want to kind of work out our feelings on the air, as they say, out in the space. Because
I don't remember what our trio configuration is called, but I would say that it is.
I think it's called the Rise of Skywalker of our.
It's
our saga.
I think we're about as put together as the script was for that film.
Yeah, we're just fast-paced montages that lead to nothing.
Here's the thing.
They have
the
microphones now?
The discourse
mic now.
Online.
They mic now.
They mic now.
The discourse on Star Wars Twitter has been ablaze.
Yes.
In a lot. So, to me, we'll start with this. To me, the discourse from before opening of what people had seen, and for some reason, a lot of people had seen this movie before it opened, it felt like, on Star Wars Twitter. Mm-hmm. So
it
they
was
did press
weird.
Screenings, they did, you know, some like Directors Guild screenings, they had the premiere. The word on it coming out of that stuff was almost overwhelmingly positive. If people remember the night before. I know that a lot of people were on media blackout. I was not. Sam, I don't believe you were either.
I was not on a blackout. Well, this is funny. I did not. I feel like we were reading different stuff. I was reading a lot of stuff that said, this is mixed. This is sloppy. It's choppy and poorly assembled, but it hits some high notes. That was kind of what I was
on regular saying. Blackout from anxiety.
Right. I will say this as an update. I do feel much more at peace the last few weeks. I just do, regardless of the fact
good,
of whether
yeah.
I like the movie or not.
Yes.
But a strange thing has happened because when the movie came out those first few days, even after it opened, a lot of the discourse was people being very defensive of the movie, saying it was a return to form, that it was very emotional for them. And then it very quickly kind of shifted into this what the hell happened kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of blown into full on conspiracies to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, because people have been trying to, you know, regardless of how a lot of people may feel about it, a lot of vocal people, especially the people that are still talking about it in the discourse, there's a feeling of like something seems to have gone wrong. Not necessarily even saying the movie's bad, but something seems very compromised. I think I even said
right.
in our in our post-show or post-viewing reaction that something about the movie seemed very compromised to me. That doesn't mean I subscribe to all of the conspiracy theories, sure. But there is something about this Star Wars movie that, like, people, a lot of people hated The Last Jedi. We love it on this show. I adore that movie. Nothing about that movie seems compromised to me. It seems like they set out to tell this story. The Force Awakens, even though apparently they kind of found it in the editing room afterward, it also seems like a complete cohesive story. This one does not. There seems to be a... It's just very odd. Sorry, I've been talking for a long time.
How many times has everybody seen it?
I saw it once.
Once.
We had tickets to see it the next morning, and I asked Mike to cancel it just because I didn't feel like sitting through it again. I found the movie exhausting.
I saw it three times.
Did you? Yeah. I thought you only saw it twice.
No, I ended up seeing it again with my family over the holiday.
And I've also just seen it once. I will say, I've watched The Last Jedi twice in the last, whatever, week and a half, 10 days since Rise of Skywalker came out.
How about that?
Which is as many times as I'd ever watched it before, despite loving it, like loving the movie. There's something, I mean, we've gone over it. And man, that has been, I mean, it's remarkable, I think, to put those two films side by side. I think one of the things that we're, part of the angle we're coming from on this podcast is, and I think this is true of a lot of Star Wars fans, a lot of Star Wars podcasts. I don't think we are like special in this, but we are also like really, really into broader film culture. We have a lot of folks who studied film, studied writing, are writers and filmmakers on this podcast. Like, we are making a film together. And so I think some of the stuff that maybe people are really willing to like brush aside in the construction of this movie is like really kind of fascinating and glaring and disappointing to us, because, or to me, because it's like, I think part of what makes The Last Jedi so rich is it's such a complete film. I think it's such a beautiful, as you said, uncompromised script. It's shot beautifully. It just looks like a movie that was made by people who are at the top of their game making movies. Mm-hmm. And I would say The Force Awakens has a lot of that, even if it was found in the editing room. They did a heck of a job finding that movie in the editing room, and that movie looks like it was really lovingly put together by some people who know what they were doing, even if maybe they were flying by the seat of their pants a bit. And this one does not. Yeah.
So I'm going to say something, and I'm going to attempt to be value neutral in it, though I think it's almost impossible. So I was listening to Kevin Smith's podcast, Fat Man Beyond, and he's on there with Mark Bernardin, who I think is very intelligent. He was saying that he felt like this movie, he wasn't a huge fan of the movie, and he said that he felt like this movie was more about the filmmaker's relationship with the audience than the filmmaker's relationship with the characters. And
wow, yeah.
I would say that's very accurate. And I've said to you guys kind of in our, you know, contemplations, our late night contemplations on this film for the last 2 weeks, that to me, this is like one of the neediest movies I've ever seen. I found it truly needy because every scene felt like the movie was saying, you like this, right? Do you like this? Do you like this? Like, you like what we're doing, right? Like, it just felt like they were so trying to please the audience.
Yeah.
And, like, I understand these movies are supposed to be audience-pleasing, but the thing of it is that, for me, I understand that this is, like, a business. It especially felt like a business in this one. And,
yeah.
And it's more, what's worrying to me is that people, if you like this movie, I'm very glad for you. However, what worries me about the overarching thing of this is that the approach to this movie seemed to be like, we want to please people by showing them what they want, as opposed to, we want to please people, show them our story, and hopefully that's what they will want to see, as The Last Jedi did. It wasn't like trying to guess what we wanted from it. It was just trying to tell a good story. So the fact that people are really responding to this idea of, like, and there's no other word for it, of like overt fan service.
Right.
The fact that people seem to really be responding to that by saying, oh, this is, they knew what we wanted to see, they knew what we wanted to see, makes me worry that this trend will only get worse.
It's kind of funny. I mean, Star Wars was the beast that started a trend that is now like this, the whole kind of nostalgia, like it took it to a new level. It took it to these like, this is my childhood. We've updated it for you adults. It's on screen now. You're not really seeing anything new, but at the same time you were. So then Last Jedi allowed it to kind of escape that for a moment. And I think
it was almost its thesis statement.
Exactly. It was kind of saying like you got we always reckon it to food here, and you got like that dessert up front, and now they're saying like here's the fine meal, right? We were eating in reverse. And this movie was Rise of Skywalker was supposed to be the appetizer. It's an appetizer. Oh, shucks. But we
got appetizers over here.
What has happened is that we went back to dessert, but we already had dessert, so we're full.
This is candy.
Candy. There you go. Dessert, yeah, this is like a piece of. This is when I'm like, when I've eaten the ice cream, I'm like, oh, there's an M&M on the table, and I just put it in my mouth, and I don't even need it. Because I put M&Ms on the ice cream, and the bag was still next to the ice cream. the problem is,
and following this analogy, it has the potential of you, instead of saying why did I eat that M&M, of saying why did I eat all that food.
Exactly. So
you know what I mean, so go on.
I'm not a believer of one movie to bring down other movies, but this one, it kind of hurts. It hurts them a little bit in my book. My point is,
it feels like it's actively trying to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My long-winded point is that from the get-go of this movie, the montage is just bizarre, so I'm not even gonna kind of acknowledge that as the start of the movie. Like that is just an odd choice. There is a language that every Star Wars film has, and I say it as my hot and fresh all the time. This movie still panned down, but in a way that was not authentic to what Star Wars was.
Well, the fact this movie didn't pan also, down. This movie panned down.
Yeah,
they also literally like the crawl. Like sets up the stakes, which are the crawl is doing some heavy lifting here, right? And they set up this crawl to explain what Kylo Ren's doing, that the Emperor's back, et cetera, et cetera. And then that montage is like that again. Like then we see what we just read, which is the opposite. Like the crawl
there's a lot
never
of,
does that.
There's
like,
a lot always of the crawl movie is, logic in this movie because at the cost of four fan service as well. So the movie starts out with that table, right? The game table that's on the Falcon. And
well, it's not the first shot.
Well, post the montage.
Right.
Is that table right there that sets these nostalgic stakes, and talk about something we've already seen before. We already saw like the ending of that story of that table.
Right.
We literally
in The Force Awakens.
Yeah. We literally saw that game finish out. Like that's a cute little button. We got the end of that carries us in the future. I was flabbergasted that they like brought it back again. By my third viewing, I was like, why do we see this table again? Like, this is completely like double fan service. Like, do people love this table so much that like we have to have a third scene of it?
I genuinely don't know that JJ had a second Star Wars in him. You know, I think he had one movie in him, and I think he got asked and or forced and or chose to make two.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I refuse to believe that he was forced.
Forced. Yeah, sure. Forced, no, absolutely not. Hand, but pressured or kind of, you know, who knows? Yeah. I don't know how those deals.
They said
get
we'll
made.
Roll over you with this truckload of money if you don't take it.
Right.
Well, but what I mean is, he could still say no. I mean, the guy's already got enough money, right? Of and he's going for a deal. So then the question is like, well. You know, what are they saying that we need to do it for the fans? Like, you gotta close this out. You owe it. They're going to love it. Like, we can't imagine doing this with anybody else. You know, that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about pressuring or forcing them to do it is, I don't know. I think you're taking me literally.
I know what you mean though. Yeah. Like his hand was kind of turned to do this movie. And if
they could have done something interesting with the third one, like have a new person direct it.
Yeah. I mean,
it was the only choice I could see. Can't believe that he came back.
It felt like halfway through this production, Bulb. That's a Star Wars character. Bob Iger.
Bulbagore.
Went on to Twitter and saw people complaining about The Last Jedi and then went to J.J. Abrams and said, fix this. And J.J. Abrams was like, but. And he's just like, I don't care. Fix this. And then this is the movie we got because they were hit a point where they're just like, this is what you want? Okay. Fine. This is the scene you get.
Yeah, and like to me, there's a level... This is going to sound so condescending, and I really don't mean it. that way. But there's a level of where when people are saying like this movie, like, oh, this is like this got it right, especially when they didn't like The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
You know, some people just really like this movie and that's cool. They like the whole sequel trilogy, also cool. But when people like especially hated The Last Jedi and they're responding to this movie like, finally, they got him in to fix it.
Yeah.
Right? My feeling is like, don't you see that they are duping you?
they're
just saying like, look here.
Right.
Like it's not yeah. good for you.
No.
And it's like, I know this is a silly thing to talk about because it's like, you know, but we have a Star Wars podcast. We obviously take it seriously. But there's a thing where I'm like, they're just giving you, like, they're placating you.
Right.
They're not. And it's like, if you like Star Wars or, you know, I don't want to bring it back to only George because, you know, plenty of people tell Star Wars stories very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, whether you hated the prequels or you liked the prequels, whatever, or even the originals, George Lucas had a story to tell, and he wasn't going to adjust it based on what people said.
Yeah.
Because if that was the case, he would have stopped making the prequels.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just
that's what people said they wanted.
Yeah.
They said, and it's just one of those things where it's like, I would have preferred seeing Disney stand behind their product and be like, The Last Jedi was the direction that we're going. We hope that you like the next installment, as opposed to like, if you like The Last Jedi, cool, but like, we're kind of sorry, and don't worry, the next one will be fixed. And then they literally have characters saying to each other like, hey, that thing I told you,
yeah,
not actually, I was wrong about that. Actually, this two times that happens in this
right.
movie.
Because
Kylo Ren says that to Rey. Yeah. Oh, they were nobody, but they were actually Palpatines. Like, I know I told you that, but never mind. And then later, the Emperor is like, strike me down and you'll kill me, and I'll become you. And then he finds out that they're a dyad, and he's like, actually, what I said, those rules don't apply anymore.
Also, wasn't there a weird time frame set in the movie? Didn't they say, like, you have 16 hours?
16 hours.
But I've never heard.
First off, that never works in a movie.
And
when
also,
they say that, it always makes everything
smaller.
And
they never came back to that point at all, did they?
Well, at one point, they were like, we only have 8 hours. And it was like, why would you say that? We like, the ticking clock is that the fleet's taking.
So
off.
Now I'm like, oh, great. Now I know the movie's half over. That's the I've never met a movie where it's like halfway through. So it's like,
all
we're
that does is make it seem
this.
Very unbelievable.
Well,
you know?
Also the sorry, I it also just irks me that it, have we and maybe we have. I don't think of like Star Wars having like hours.
No,
like do we, is that a t- like is that a unit of time they've like usually used?
I don't
like
know.
I've never I can't think
I,
of an instance
I
where
feel
anybody
like
said like it's going to take an hour to get
I
there.
I think there was an episode we reviewed of The Mandalorian and they said something like 30 minutes, and that
maybe
was recent. But so, no, I agree with you, Sam. They go to.
But do you think they spell it like minutes, like MINITs?
Yeah, right. And it's just like it's so weird that you okay. First off, you choose to bring a character back like Palpatine. All right, that in itself, whatever. But then you have him just like speaking logistics. Like this guy, if this guy is like an evil empire that can live forever, he's focused on an hour negotiation.
Also, if they had any guts at all,
it sounds
if
insane.
They had any guts at all, he opens by saying there are some things that there are aspects of the dark side that some people deem unnatural.
Yeah.
If they had any guts at all, the first line of this movie would be, are you familiar?
Yeah.
With
right.
the tale of Darth
right,
Plagueis.
Right.
But they wouldn't even have the guts to do that because it's referencing the prequels.
Right. They couldn't do that. I mean, I know what he spent those 16 hours doing, though. It's obvious. Making his red ascot.
he was hand-making it.
He was making Here's that the... felt velour.
Also, people keep saying that, like, oh, the Star Wars saga has always been about these two families. It's like, that's not true. It's about this one guy.
We didn't even know that guy's last name.
Who's terrorizing.
We didn't know that guy's last name.
Who's terrorizing
yeah.
his family. And yeah. not even his family, Anakin.
Yeah,
was really just about Anakin.
I think Kevin Smith, on his podcast, had a very good point where he's like, was this like the Palpatine saga if it's all about him?
Like... Yeah, well, they're not the Capulets and the Montagues. It's yeah. like one Palpatine yeah. and one Skywalker and his kids.
This is the thing that I think that this is where the whole bringing back the Emperor, which I think we're all agreed was like perhaps the biggest and most grave misstep they made with this movie.
Right.
And you know, JJ has
I, yeah.
JJ's made, yeah, let me just, JJ's made some cases for that, right? And the idea of, oh, well, a villain introduced in, you know, whatever act of whatever story, blah, 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 comes back at the end. And that's all, that, I guess that's a fine explanation, but what I think it really does is it really, really betrays the trilogy that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
It betrays what, so when JJ launched, you know, what was to be, you know, Episode 7, it's continuing the story beyond, you know, the people we saw before. And similarly to how the prequels saw, you know, the villain Vader, you know, as a young man in his arc, and then the original trilogy followed Luke on his arc, you know, this was going to, really, we were going to be sort of surprised that the villain was the Skywalker of this series, and mm-hmm. that, the, you know, the heroes weren't from that family. This movie, like, betrays what was set up, because I don't think it, like, honors anything that we knew about Rey, anything we knew about, you know, if this was all supposed to be about redeeming Ben Solo and Skywalker, I don't right. think he gets a truly satisfying ending either.
No, no one and, came and, out of the, yeah.
And you wouldn't also, by bringing back the Emperor for 9 after him not appearing in 7 and 8, you know, it feels like, well, this doesn't feel as connected to 1 to 6. But then it also doesn't satisfy 7 and 8 and 9 as a thing. It drives me nuts.
I wouldn't have minded if the Emperor came about if we saw that. I think that in itself is interesting and can be interesting.
Well, here's the thing. The argument that people will be making is, yeah, but Rian Johnson threw a wrench in the whole thing. Cool. Well, like, here's the thing. If I'm driving and they close down the highway and they say, now you have to take this detour, I don't go,
I mean,
fine, but as soon as you're not looking, I'm getting back on the highway.
I just think anecdotally, through our text chains, we wrote like 30 different plots that could have happened. Like, that could have done
actually
it, yeah.
I actually do think we should do an episode. I've pitched it before. I think we might do an episode where we go through, like, we'll do our, you know, our versions of this movie if we wrote it.
Yeah.
Because I've really enjoyed that too, Chris. Like, seeing the ideas that we've had, I think, are really good.
Yeah.
Here's one thing that I think
we should be
just
right.
To be clear to the listeners, just so that they don't think we're like sad dudes. We don't think like, oh, like we definitely could have done this.
Yeah.
We're really just being blowhards.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like us being like, our ideas are really good, and like, you know what, they should listen.
Well,
I think that's
speak
that
for
that
yourself.
Said,
they should,
a
they
fair
should listen
disclaimer.
To me. They should take my ideas. They're pretty good.
I'm just saying,
Sam, don't give them away on the pod
sound
for
like
free.
We think there's a chance.
Yeah, just be clear.
Ideas.
When I text you guys on the podcast text chain, you guys are getting my B level ideas. I save the goods for myself.
We're BCC and Kathleen Kennedy at Disney.com, baby.
I send her
we
every
talked
episode.
About, we were talking earlier about like the conspiracy theory, which I want to get into the one we've seen, but I also want to throw, I have my own out there.
Okay, I would prefer to hear yours first, because everyone probably listening knows the other conspiracy theory.
Okay, so my, like, weird conspiracy theory, and I kind of, like, I definitely mentioned this on text, and I can't remember if I said it in our, like, you know, stupor state record after the movie. But, you know, for me, The Last Jedi gave such a satisfying ending to really the series as a whole. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't need anything more after that. And I realized it was, like, inconclusive on, like, the Rey and Kylo storyline.
Yeah.
But there was some beauty in that. That was, like, the old serials, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, on which Star Wars, you know, was initially conceived by George Lucas. So, in that regard, I was like, okay, I wonder, this is the conspiracy theory part, if they were like, well, we kind of have an ending that satisfies one group of fans with 8. Now, if we make 9, that gives us the freedom to make 9 completely pandering to the other group of fans who were wholly unsatisfied by that movie.
Mm-hmm.
We know that it will disappoint, you know, column A fans.
Right, but those losers will go see it anyhow.
And then the idea is that all these people on, you know, column B fans will watch 1 through 7 and 9, and column A fans will watch 1 through 8, and they'll just like have 2 8 movie sagas with different endings. And I'm like, is Iger like that crazy to just be like, well, they're watching 8 of our 9 movies anyway?
I'll tell you what, Sam. I'll tell you what, compelling.
Sam,
that's compelling.
I do believe that almost completely. They might have been like, yeah, we know, but we made it for this audience because you already got the good one, so
like if it had been middling, or if the split of opinion had not been so strong and so divisive of like kind of literally like internet age, like best movie ever, worst movie ever, yeah. Which is kind of what we saw for a couple of years. I wonder if, well, maybe we would have gotten something that kind of continued along and maybe lived up to, or maybe didn't quite live up to the expectations. But this was like, this to me felt like they were taking another swing. We're taking another at bat. You pick the one you want.
What's
well,
funny
when people
though
people are going on Twitter saying things like character assassination about Luke Skywalker from The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you think that wig wasn't character assassination?
So bad.
I'll tell you what.
The wig that JJ says that he chose in the afterlife.
If those people are saying that they finally fixed it, they're still sure talking about The Last Jedi enough. Like, they're still bring it up and every other they're like cursed then. There's something like,
at the conclusion of Luke's character, if your whole thing is like, this is the Skywalker saga, it should be about the Skywalkers and Luke and our hero.
Yeah.
Which version of Luke's ending satisfied you?
Yeah.
The one where he's a Muppet who catches a lightsaber and then does like a wink to camera, or the one projects himself across the galaxy in a way we've never seen a Jedi reach that level of power. It's like it was so masterfully handled the last time around that this was such a weird bad encore.
That he's the one who lifts the X-wing is so maddening.
It is to me one of the most upsetting things I've ever seen on
it
film.
It is so, because it's like a one-to-one of like, it should have been the new character, but they knew that people would get mad.
It is.
That she lifted the ship that Luke 35 years ago in real life
Here's why it's maddening. When I see Luke Skywalker fighting Darth Vader in Cloud City, Bespin, and Luke's hand gets cut off, there's a part of my brain every time I see that scene that thinks, oh, this is not going to happen. I don't know. You know that feeling? You get that from some movies. Like, I get that
in
Jurassic
Park. Sure, like the end of Back to the Future.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always tense.
I would say, like, Godfather has a few of those. Like,
there's a few of those moments.
Oh, he's not going to kill the guy.
Are they
going to
take the cannolis?
Yeah, exactly.
He's not going to shoot him, right? He's not
going to
shoot him.
But for something, it just does something.
They're going to leave the cannoli.
The opposite effect of that scene, when I've seen Rise of Skywalker 3 times, was like, oh, Rey's going to lift the X-Wing. Every time I saw it, I just suffered this disappointment. We're like, Luke's not going to do that. And then I have to look at his stupid face. That's the last image of Luke that I saw, is Mark Hamill literally hamming it up. No offense to Mark Hamill.
I mean, but a little bit. He's not the greatest.
You just... It's like just so upsetting. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, was it better when we got the bookended images of him looking at two suns?
Yeah,
and disappearing to be one with the Force.
Yep.
Or him with his hand in a claw shape,
like he probably said, "Hey, what am I lifting up?" And they're like, "I don't know."
you knew exactly.
Yeah,
we'll fix it in the edit.
Well, so I mean,
it was such a lame choice, and it was so clearly because they knew people that like trolls would get mad if she lifted it.
Yep, that goes back to kind of why I think this movie as a whole doesn't work on the level of the other Star Wars movies. And from the very get go of the first Star Wars movie, Star Wars: A New Hope to some, Star Wars to others. You see the crawl, and it says a long time ago, or you don't see the crawl before that. It says a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So this is setting the stage. They're basically saying this is a story that has happened. And then it shows the crawl. You kind of read where we're at in the story, and you're watching stuff happen. And it's a movie, and it's happening in a place that's far away from our Earth and a long time ago. So contextually, time in place, you have no idea what the rules of this world are. Mm-hmm. You're learning that as you watch the movie. Oh, they have droids. Oh, this thing. And that's what makes it really good science fiction, because they've put you in a world that you have no idea. You can't really, you can relate only through English and like humor and just storytelling.
Yeah, humanity.
What is the binding thing there. It's like, oh my gosh, this is happening so far away. That's what makes this story beautiful. Throughout, When you give these little pieces of fan service, you start to break down that aspect of Star Wars. you're no longer watching something happening far, far away. You're watching something happening in a movie theater. You're watching something happening.
You're watching the internet. That's really interesting, Chris.
This is like one of the best things you've ever dropped.
You're watching watching our real life world penetrate that world.
Exactly. You're seeing
it's in direct conversation with Reddit.
Exactly.
And with
Exactly. So you're watching something break down. This is literally like, I had two very long drives and flights over the holiday break, and I was trying to like pinpoint what it was that made me like kind of just cringe inside. And that, yeah. I think it's this feeling that it's like, oh no, you're not supposed to give us these because you're pulling us out of this story that's literally supposed to be told as a tale in retrospect.
That's a beautiful point, Chris. Yeah, that's truly like eloquently put. That's a beautiful point.
And once you
can't transport yourself.
You reference it back to what's actually happening around you, that whole level of Star Wars goes away. And it's like, we don't have anything else to rely on from that narrator. It's almost like the narrator becomes faulty because there's no source material for Star Wars. So,
do you know that's so funny? Because there's a part in The Force Awakens that always sat kind of strange to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, it is fan servicey, but it wasn't nearly as egregious as the things we're talking about.
I think there was kind of a slow burn with that kind of stuff, and then it just heightened in the final one.
The dry grass caught fire in this movie. But it's when they say this was the Death Star and this is Starkiller Base. You know, and they have like the holograms.
Right.
And
yeah.
To me, because there's a point where like Leia's like, when have you ever helped out? And don't say the Death Star. And it was like, did they even know that it was called the Death Star? Like, I understand that possibly there might be a scene in A New Hope where they're like, these are the plans to the Death Star. But I'm not sure that's even true. And it's like, would they be referring to it as the Death Star? Or are they just calling it that because that's what we call it?
Right.
You know Does this make sense to anyone?
Yeah. It makes total sense. I don't know the answer.
There's little meta things that actually work. Like Luke Skywalker, I thought he was a myth. Things like that, where it's like, oh, he's a legend in their world.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. And that gives you so much information about what's actually happening there.
But if it was them being like, Luke Skywalker, I heard his dad ran around with a really annoying dude talked funny. It'd be like, oh, they're taking a shot at Jar Jar?
It's like when Dominic Monaghan says, cloning can only be done with Sith magic. And it's like, 20 minutes ago, none of these guys even knew what a Jedi was.
I was going to say, it's a huge problem then that like in JJ's two movies, the first establishes this beauty and like this myth of like, I thought Luke Skywalker was a myth. I thought the idea that one man could do that was like
that's
crazy.
Like, that's like
and
the
then
greatest
like,
gift.
And then they're like, well, Palpatine's back and he's got a Sith fleet.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, have you ever heard the words, what? Huh? Like, I get that, like, Leia's there.
Did civilians know that the Emperor existed?
Right,
I'm sure they knew that there was an Emperor, but I highly doubt that they knew that he was, like, they didn't know that Jedi and Sith were, like, a thing by the time, you know, I'll refer to it as A New Hope, but I call it Star Wars. they didn't, like, necessarily know that was a thing, you know?
Yeah,
it was,
no,
like,
that,
lore. And then it's even farther removed.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah,
what a mess! Jeez,
they really. And then the
clones in the world of Star Wars would have been like well documented.
Mm-hmm.
They like
right,
were
yeah, and
the
not
war.
They weren't built by magic. They were built on Kamino.
Yeah, they
yeah
explained,
people knew about.
They explained that plot. They explained that. Cipher Diaz ordered put in the purchase order.
Jedi Master Cipher Diaz.
There's that. That's one aspect that pulls me out, and then the other aspect. It happened throughout this trilogy, too, is just the idea of scale, where things started to get almost cartoonishly large. And so, like, Starkiller Base was kind of, like, too large to be,
that was
like,
as far as you could push.
It kind of breaks this inverse.
Well, it blows up five planets and no one cares.
Yeah, exactly. And then, because then it's like, what is the real threat there? And then those kind of just giant AT-ATs at the end of Last Jedi, that kind of was like another one of those moments where like the scale was just, there's something too cartoonish or like large about that. And then in this one, they're like, hey, let's have the Emperor magically make 10,000 Star Destroyers that probably need a crew of 100,000 people each.
Like, a million Star Destroyers isn't cool. You know what's cool? A billion Star Destroyers.
It's just a weird choice.
Even when they show up with the like rebellion fleet, I'm like, that's too many ships. Yeah, I don't feel anything.
Well, yeah, exactly.
The photography of that whole scene is, I mean, rewatch any other Star, literally any other Star Wars, and like the space, like geography, and like battle, like flight, like in flight battles are like amazing, and it's so muddy and bad. Like I don't remember it at all. It was so cluttered. It was just gray.
Yeah.
This movie ends with a lightning bolt into the sky. That's like a 1995 like Shadow reference or something, or like what was the Phantom. Like that's not a Star Wars movie ending. It's baffling that they let this happen. Yeah. But the other way that I thought it felt small, Chris, and this is what I actually thought you were going to say, was that, you know, when you look at the original trilogy, you know, we've talked a lot about like the artful play of like keeping a movie fast but also having the downbeats and the moments to talk. But like those used to be built in, that like even with hyperdrive, like we're talking about distance of like light years upon light years, so it took time to get places.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the way they
strap
both,
in, we're pulling up to Alderaan.
The way they both made, so first of all, they made like light speed go faster.
Yes.
Like everyone just instantly appeared wherever they said. And then with the addition and expansion of a thing I really liked about the dyad force connection that Rian Johnson set up between Rey and Kylo, the effect it had was, it was just like there was no sense of urgency or threat of anyone getting anywhere.
Yeah.
There was no sense of, you know, in the original trilogy, if someone said like, We got to get out of here. The First Order's in The Last Jedi opens where they're like leaving the base and they're worried that the First Order is coming.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a sense of like, we don't know when they're going to be here. And then obviously they arrive right then. Mm-hmm. But that was like believable. And then that whole movie is a slow chase through space.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
And this feels like such a reaction to that, to be like, oh, now we can be anywhere. None of it matters. All these planets don't matter. You'll never see them again. You'll never see these people again. It's the end of the thing. We don't care anymore. It's, you know,
yeah,
snap your fingers.
There's just a...
I mean,
these two actors to talk, it doesn't matter that they're, you know, across the universe from each other. Just snap your fingers. They're there.
It's just an abandonment of, like, the rules. And I know, that this can be argued against, because some of the Force stuff, people will say, well, that's not how the Force works. But then it's... The Force can be anything. It's just kind of like a plot device at times. And there are certain things that if you follow, then it makes for the world to make actual stakes. Like you said, if you can go anywhere, it's like the end of a little mini spoiler for Game of Thrones. By the end of it, they could just go from island to island, which in the earlier seasons would have taken them like years to go to. So then in the later seasons, they were just like, hey, I got to go to this one. And then like the next scene, they're just there. So,
the reason the journeying in these movies was important was because that was the moments that we got the characters sitting, like, literally sitting in the lounge.
That was where you got your shawarma moment, or the moment where they try and lift Thor's hammer. You know,
half of Empire Strikes Back is them just being like, can you get me a wrench? Like, this isn't working.
Yeah. And there's a scene where they're just like trying on clothes and Bespin, like, they're like, just hanging
and
out,
like, and
looking
like
at a hotel room.
It's not just good because it's in the original trilogy. It's like those things in movies are necessary for us to like get connected. And it's like, I mean, the light speed skipping was like a thing where it was like this was set up and then didn't go anywhere.
Well,
and also, wouldn't light speed skipping, like, wouldn't it be better just to hit it once and then just be there?
There was also a phenomenon. Yeah, right. Yeah, why not just go? There was a phenomenon in this movie that I noticed also, that it looked like they tried to take concepts that Last Jedi used and then were like, oh, now we have this tool. But then they like didn't get it. And then so one example would be like the light speed skipping, because we had the whole thing with light speed tracking.
Right.
The Last Jedi, which was like, oh, like, I didn't know you couldn't track in light speed. And I thought that was a cool little plot device to kind of say, like, why don't they just do this? This one, there was like light speed skipping, it didn't really have much of a plot payoff at all. It was just, if anything, it was a disservice to Poe's character, which was just like, he's just a fly boy now again, and he does that.
Yeah, after his all his growth, just erased. Yeah.
And then Daisy Ridley kind of says, like, you're so difficult, like, almost as a joke, after he had, after Holdo used his ship as a weapon. But, and then the other kind of weird, like, thing they didn't, they couldn't quite get the dyad conversations. Like, they weren't to the level in the use case that Rian Johnson used them. I think
so. What's interesting to me, sorry, complete your thought.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, it seemed like they used them in, like, almost just to write them in the same scene rather than to use them to actually, like, have an effect of, like, oh, that kind of conversation affects them because she can't get out of his head, he can't get out of her head. And then also Snoke said he connected them together. So does that mean that he did that?
Well, so what was interesting to me about the dyad thing, and to me that was the most interesting part of the movie, like, just that idea.
Yeah,
not
I agree.
Necessarily
I
execution,
agree.
This idea of the fourth dyad. And ironically, or coincidentally, but not really, as we're talking about this, I'm realizing it's like, that's the only part that they took from The Last Jedi and were like, we'll take this and, like, move forward with it.
Yeah, they advanced.
You know, like,
they
had the connection.
The ball there.
Yeah, they were like, so let's move forward. What would be the next logical step to this? And it's like, the stuff, like, I thought the best moment in the movie was the payoff of, like, even though it's clunky getting there.
Yep.
But this moment where they've established the visual language of the dyad thing, you know, not as elegantly as they do in The Last Jedi, but they were doing fine with it. And they've established that they can actually move materials back and forth
between each other. I will backtrack. I will say that that aspect of it, they did, like, heighten it, which was good. I just felt like they just gave us, like, they weren't using it smartly.
I agree with you. I don't think the explanation, but the emotional payoff of her sending the lightsaber
that,
to him
was
a glimpse of, like, this is what this movie could have been.
There's a
you know,
lot of
it was
those,
like, this wonderful moment where the camera goes around and she's looking at the camera and then he is, and you realize that they're looking at each other. Then he has it and you're like, cool. If that had been set up in a better script or better whatever, that would have been, like, a clapping moment.
Well,
but
the
it
way
wasn't
they,
really
they looked for so many of those moments throughout the movie, and I'm sure they got them from some audiences. We said, you know, when we saw this with our audience, it was like crickets every time there was a big reveal. You know, Rey Palpatine was crickets, the, like, like death everyone, and resurrection of Ben Solo, all this stuff was like
Snap
really like
Snap Wexley's surprising death.
I clapped.
Yeah, none of that stuff, like, really landed. I will say, for me, it did really land, and I feel like I've been so negative on this. Like, I really want to be, like, I want to give the movie everything I can. And so, like, that to me was a moment of greatness in this movie. That
was
awesome.
A moment of greatness I would have felt so much more if anything that preceded it felt
like
it had earned it. I 100%
agree that little sequence was, like, very powerful. Like, that, you're absolutely right. Like, that's a very heightened Star Wars thing. And that's one of those moments we kind of talked about after seeing it where it's like, everything was lining up. The music, the emotion, what you're seeing are all, like, there. But then it's just, like, very... It's just a glimpse of what could have happened.
Yeah.
Well, that would have been the equivalent in terms of what the emotion could have been if it had been as earned in the last as it was in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Is that would have been the throne room... It would have been the same feeling as the throne room sequence, which
another,
is, like... What's happening? This is slow. I realize what's happening. This is so exciting.
That's another example of kind of what I was saying. It's like, it's almost like a dumbed down version of those really well executed scenes in The Last Jedi, where it's like, all right, they could talk to each other through this forced dyad conversation thing, but then, like, what they were saying and doing wasn't. I don't know. There's something missing. I don't know how to, like, kind of phrase it, but
I also just
I didn't lie
they,
to
like,
you. What they were nobody because they made themselves nobody. They were really somebody.
Yeah.
Did they like what? Also did the same person shoot this as who shot Force Awakens?
No, definitely.
Because
not.
Because
oh,
like
as Force
they
Awakens.
To,
I'm sorry. Maybe.
That's what I'm asking.
I thought you were
going to
say Last Jedi.
No. Because I'm saying, like, between. So I don't notice it so much. Like, I think the cinematography of Force Awakens, I don't think it's as good as Last Jedi, but I think it's really good. And I think, like, sometime between that movie in this movie, either the person who shot it or whoever they hired to shoot this one, like, forgot where to put a camera.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost never in the place that, like, gives you a compelling, interesting frame. You know, it's just, like, there's so much about it that's just a miss. And I think you really hit on a thing.
That could be,
the fan service element, which then as an additive, like, takes you out of the movie and says, like, this is a movie. Remember, this is a movie.
Yes.
This is all coming together.
And there's little moments that you feel like, I mentioned this in the last podcast, when Lando comes back with the fleet, they play, like, the Star Wars credits theme, which has never been played during the movie before.
Right.
And it's like, I would put money on the fact that it's like, they knew they hadn't earned the moment. They knew it wasn't there, so they took a shortcut, and they played the song that we love so much so that we'd all feel
it really is
chills
like
a, that we would feel if we were listening to it in
like,
the car.
They're like playing with like our dopamine release. And like all right, exactly.
That's like, truly, like, honestly, that moment I felt betrayed. Like, I was like, that was a dirty thing to do.
I really enjoyed Lando's reading of, like, it's like a Wookiee's easy to spot out in a crowd or something like that. For some reason, the pull out moments that you enjoyed. I did, for some reason, Lando's readings of his lines in the thing, he looked like he was having so much fun.
I almost felt like he was having a little too much fun.
Maybe he was having too much
fun. I was like, there's almost no stakes. This guy doesn't seem to think anything will go wrong.
Yeah, right. I almost appreciated that fact. He was it like, truly, when he's like was laughing at the Millennium Falcon, at one point he just goes like, ah!
Like, I was happy for Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah,
that seems like a lovely man.
That was more so. I did enjoy his, like, just happiness. I was always excited to see whatever the scene was. I was like, oh, good. Just show me him at least.
Like,
I could get some.
I love that yellow shirt too.
Yeah,
he's kept.
Yeah,
it's literally the shirt he's wearing in Solo.
He's kept it for a long time. He had it let out a little bit.
There's also some just like dramatic irony things that were kind of overlooked and confusing for me. Like, so I think when Rey screams Chewie, that is amazing. Like, when the way she says that.
And that's a great sequence, too.
And that whole sequence is beautiful. Except that for dramatic irony to work in a movie, the audience needs to know something. We need to know ahead of time that Chewie has gone on to a different ship. Otherwise, otherwise it's a trick. Because if we know something that the characters on screen don't know, then now we have that inside of us, and then we're like, oh no, don't act that way. You don't have to worry. Like, it makes us lose control.
Or make us believe that he might be dead.
Yeah.
There was no piece of me that was like, Chewie's dead. I was that's not how they'd kill Chewie. Not with the fan service they've been doing so far.
Yep.
Which is why they should have shown, I think Chris's solution is the best, which is my knee jerk solution was like, oh, they needed to not reveal that he was, like, in the movie, not reveal that he was alive for, you know, an hour.
Yeah. Here's the thing. My solution would be kill Chewie.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, right.
And I was like, or kill Chewie. And I like Chris's best, actually, which is that show that there are two ships and they put him on a different one. Because we know that, like, her agony is misplaced. And we know that her anger and fear and hate and all this stuff that's brewing is, like, for the wrong reason. So, like, we want her to... better.
And then they did it again with when... And this was, like, the biggest botch. And I still cannot believe they didn't add one more scene of Finn telling Rey about the Force thing. Or telling someone before they did this. Because when he's like, Rey, I have a secret. It worked... It worked in Return of the Jedi because Yoda had told Luke that Leia was his sister. And then when they're on the bridge, and then again, dramatic irony would say, she can't tell Han because she's confused at what's going on, and it's too complicated, and the Force is a scary thing. Yeah. And it's almost
For a moment, it becomes like a comedy of errors.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, she thinks it's like a curse at that moment, and... that works because we know what the thing is. So it makes us feel like, oh, no, you got to tell Han. Like, there's driving tension there. The fact that they didn't even, like, come back to it, it was... That, to me, is the weirdest part of this whole movie, is that Finn's like, I have a secret. Poe gets angry. Everyone's like, oh, he's in love with Rey. Like, people that are very smart that were reviewing the movie afterwards were like, apparently Poe's in love with Rey. Like, it was so strange to me that we didn't get any more of that.
Or just, well, yeah, it's like one of those things, like, you can't cut out 40% of a subplot.
Yes.
But yeah. And it certainly can't be the last 40%.
Yeah.
Like, you got to cut the whole thing out or keep the whole thing in.
Yeah.
You can't just be like, I have a secret, and then end the movie.
Because it's like, I'm just confused.
And then
by
in the
that.
Press tour, tell yeah. everyone that it's that he was force sensitive. Yeah.
Was that, is that well, what that was for? Like, if you want to find out the answer to this question, go online.
So I think, yeah.
Was there, is there a webisode that'll
there's
tell
a,
me?
Yeah, exactly. There's a 1-800. There's a 1-800 number. You vote whether you think it was love or the force, and then they're going to reveal it later as canon.
It was just, it was weird.
I feel like this is a good actual, like, segue, though, into we teased the other conspiracy theory, which is the idea that, like, this film was heavily edited by the studio at Bob Iger's, you know, command. There's a lot of people sort of banging the drum, similar to what Batman fans out there will know, that there's a release the Snyder cut of Justice League movement, and it's like already we're seeing that gain some social media traction. What do we think? Like, it
so
that's
we should
the most...
say there was a Reddit thread that came out that was claiming to be, we don't know, but it was claiming to be from, like, a Lucasfilm insider, right?
Right.
That was basically a list of bullet points of, like, what went
wrong. It was somebody reporting from a source
right
inside Lucasfilm, allegedly. Right. Allegedly.
Could you imagine, so we'll go over this a little bit, but imagine there isn't an Abrams cut, and there's a hashtag, release the Abrams cut, and JJ's just sitting there sweating, like, oh, no.
Well, what is pretty funny is, like, hopefully he made, like, a copy on his own personal computer, and he's like...
No, now, I'm saying that, like, what if this is what he thought was the good one?
Exactly. Yeah,
and he's
exactly.
just like, they're all like, no, release what you really wanted.
Exactly. Well, I'm
it's
saying
like
as,
if you told someone you were in love with them, and they were like, no, but seriously, what did you want to tell me?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like if you wanted to tell someone you were force sensitive, and then, like, they were like, no, but seriously, what did you want to tell me? But, like, you hadn't told them anything ever.
And then someone else gets angry. Well, I'm saying if JJ had, like, a copy of the movie edit on his computer, and then he's just reading Twitter what everybody wants. He's like, oh yeah, this is the cut that I made. He re-edits it, sends it out. Here's the cut.
So just
that's what they did
the
first time.
Some of the bullet points in this alleged story, which there may be no truth to. Who
yes.
knows? But, you know, we need content.
It's so much fun. This is a gift for our podcast.
Is one that one of the things is that Disney being angry about the bad robot Warner Brothers deal. That they purposely tanked this movie to lower the stock of J.J. Abrams. And because they're afraid of the threat he may pose by being at Warner Brothers in increasing the cultural cachet of the DC universe versus the MCU. So that is interesting to me.
Corporate espionage, it's a tale, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, man, that stuff is fun.
Yeah.
But, like, this idea that they wanted to lower the stock because they will sacrifice episode 9 in order to sacrifice. They still made $1 billion.
But to the theory's credit is that, like, I mean, this movie is a no fail situation, though. Like, who's going to get up? Who's going to get to 8 and not see 9?
Well, sure. I mean, I'm not going to see it more times.
People hated The Last Jedi, but somehow this movie has made almost as much some people.
It's still a long ways away.
I thought it was catching up. Sorry.
No. Oh. It had a smaller drop off on its second weekend, but it still had the smallest opening weekend of any of the.
Well, it had a smaller drop off, but it also made less money the first weekend.
Oh wow!
Right.
So,
gotcha. Is that because they released it on a Tuesday morning? No, I'm just kidding.
I think the reviews do matter a little bit, weirdly. I think you might be right then.
There are people like, I mean, like my parents like Star Wars fine, but if the reviews aren't good, they're not going to go see it.
They won't. Well, you know, that's true. I did have a friend that he said, oh, I read the reviews. I'm going to wait till it's out on video to watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I think there probably is a lot of that happening. Yeah.
They say, you know what? I'll go see 1917 instead, or you know, whatever.
Yeah, four different.
Well, apparently they're all going to see Little Women.
Yeah,
which you should. It's so good.
That's my favorite saga film of the year.
You know what I
truly?
You know what
this
I saw?
Is just this is just a short PSA.
Yeah,
Little Women is so incredibly good. Everyone go see it. It's just a beautiful film.
You know what I went to see on New Year's Day? That was just the perfect way to kick off a new decade. I went to see a little film directed by Rian Johnson, Knives Out. It was my first time seeing it. I thought it was great.
And
I thought
it's really good, right?
I mean, it's like, look at the man's body work, go through every one of his films, and it's like, yep, it's one of those. It's the reason we should all be off our gourds excited that he's hopefully still doing his trilogy. Because like or whatever series of movies, because yes. The guy knows how to make a movie. But also, I kind of want him to just be like, hey, just do Benoit Blanc films. Like, honestly, right. Well, like, you gave us the perfect Star Wars. Like,
yeah. Well, you also have some very specific reasons why you'd want that, Sam.
What are you thinking of?
I think there's a little connection point between that movie and something else you enjoy.
Oh, Ana de Armas. She's going to be in the new James Bond movie.
Sam's a big 2077 or 2079 head.
Yeah.
Wait, what's it played around?
2049.
Yeah. 2049. Sorry. Oh, my God. That was my favorite movie that year. This is what 30s. This is what your 30s look like.
I mean, to kind of go back to this conspiracy theory, there's also one train that there's lots of different cuts out there that JJ has made this 3-hour and 2-minute cut.
There was a George and JJ cut, apparently.
There was a George and JJ cut.
I'll bet.
there was the rumors I have heard is that there was a Colin Trevorrow script, which was completely scrapped.
That is true. That's like been confirmed.
Okay, so that was and I heard they took
that wasn't part of the Reddit leak though.
I heard they took nothing of that. And then I heard that they had JJ and Terrio do a script. And it did not pass Iger. And so then they brought in George, and then George and JJ did a script. Didn't take any of George's notes after a rewrite. And
I wish you guys would stop calling me down here then. You know? I have a life, you know.
I was going to name a fictitious Los Angeles roadway.
You know, the traffic on the 405 is really hell getting back up to Skywalker Ranch. I just...
And then there was an Iger version of the script with JJ.
Wait, that Iger wrote?
No, like he didn't write it, but he basically was like
he oversaw.
This is what I want.
Whoa!
The rumor is that Iger gave.
This is all alleged.
Some,
yeah,
yeah. All of this is rumor. We are spreading spurious lies. Most likely,
fun. Building.
Well, this is what's going on in the discourse. This is what started the release of the J.J. Abrams cut. So this is relevant.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So, but it's and
this should have been season 5 of Project Greenlight.
What I'm curious about is the people who are really, you know, enjoying this movie or doubling down or saying they're enjoying it. I find it so hard to believe anybody's actually enjoying it, to be honest.
It is. I keep saying that's so
dismissive because people...
Yeah,
I'm sure there's people listening that
liked it. And they're not wrong.
They're not wrong.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I did sincerely believe JJ what he said. If you have criticisms of the movie, whether or not, everyone is right. Like, I think...
Yeah, I think that's...
If people genuinely enjoyed this movie, they're not wrong. If people hated The Last Jedi, they're definitely wrong. But, like, people liking this movie, I don't think
And it's not that I'm completely devoid. I don't think anyone or anybody is lesser than for liking this, or you don't get something. Your fandom is your fandom, and... There's scenes in this movie I also enjoyed. I know we're being
I like Revenge of the Sith more than Return of the Jedi.
Well, there you go.
Listen, okay? People have told me I shouldn't like things.
I think that's also what we've almost had it too easy as Star Wars fans as of late.
That's the thing. These young kids, they've never had one come out.
Yeah, they don't understand.
Try dealing with Attack of the Clones and then tell me this was a hard week.
Yeah. I think that's the rub is that
so what
as a Star Wars fan we've experienced this kind of phenomenon before, and at this point the over under of what people consider to be good ones versus bad ones is there's more bad ones considered than considered good ones.
but also here's what I'm curious about, right? There's plenty of people who genuinely really love this movie, and yeah, like you say, that is awesome. And I hope there's a lot of you, and I hope that you also can appreciate the others and get a lot of joy out of the franchise as we do. There's, I think, also some people who kind of are loving this movie in a reactionary way. We've talked about the ways that it does backtrack and pull away from the previous film, Last Jedi, and I'm like, are you like quietly hoping that the JJ cut exists and it's different, or like are you dreading it because you're like, no, I love this movie so much, I hope there's not a different cut that, like,
great question. That's a weird place.
You know
to
what
be.
Was very funny? I was talking to my coworker, and he's not like he likes movies, but he's not a huge Star Wars guy, and I was telling him this kind of mad theory that was happening, and he was like, so you didn't like the movie. And a lot of people didn't like the movie, so now they're just saying that there's another cut of the film out
That's the other thing. This is honestly, so this, back to what I was saying earlier about this being the trend, this is what happens when people are used to just getting what they want in the movie. Like, I don't want to sound like a parent, but it's like, if you're used to just being like expecting a movie to give you the things you want, that extends to, and so if it doesn't, you better fix it. There was a time, everyone, where if a movie was bad, we were just like, that movie was bad.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. How do you plan on fixing this, Disney?
Yeah, it's just like, why did I rent Batman and Robin?
When are we going to get...
When
Town
and Country bombed, everyone didn't ask for the alternate cut of Town and Country.
Godfather 3. When are we going to get
part of me that's like, cool, if they released a JJ cut, like, I'd watch it, maybe it's better. But there's a piece of me that's like... Or we could just learn to live with the movies we get.
We just get it.
Well,
and then
I've made a lot of statements of like, I said earlier, like, maybe you're a person who watches 1 to 8, or maybe you're a person who watches 1 to 7 and 9. And the truth is, I know myself. I'm gonna be someone who watches 1 to 9 in Rogue One and Solo. And like, I don't love Solo that much right now. I'm really down on it. I really don't love Rise of Skywalker that much. I have some issues with some of the prequels, but like, what the greatest thing I think we can kind of take away is that, like, over like the long arc of time, like, as the arrow falls and we get farther and farther away from it, all these things start to level out, you know, like, you know, your highest highs are always going to probably stay really high. We're, you know, people, you know, Empire diehards are always going to love Empire, Star Wars, you know, Last Jedi, whatever. You're always going to, like, the highs are always going to be so high, and you're going to get so much watching them. And then all the others, they're just going to kind of rise up over time because you sort of like, you see it enough and you start going like, this is part of the thing I love. So, you know, that's what's happened with every one of them that I've been dissatisfied with before. I mean, I was somebody who really had no time or love for the prequels for a long time. I think living with you, Chris, and watching them once a year was like revelatory, you know?
Prequel season.
You know? So, you know, I'm sure that's bound to happen if you're someone like us who was, you know, underwhelmed and disappointed by this movie. And if you love it, don't worry. It's not going to fade, you know? And don't let the fact that we weren't into it, you know, rain on your parade at all. Like,
I think there's something inherently broken about the idea that if someone's disappointed with a movie, or if a quote-unquote fandom is disappointed with a movie, that they must demand, like, some kind of...
retribution.
Like they're owed. There must be some consolation for this, because I didn't like this. And it's like, listen, this is the risk we take.
This is it.
You know, like...
there's people that, like... Yeah, the odds of a movie coming together at all are very, very low.
It's really hard to make a good movie.
It's really hard to make a good movie. I mean, we kind of nail down about 10 a year that we say are worth watching. And the fact that a movie on this scale has probably never been done before, I mean, I'm not saying this as like an excuse or as a, oh, they tried real hard, but it was an impossible void. I mean, we got lucky. and that's really how, I don't think any filmmaker ever sets out to make a bad movie. I think some kind of money motivation might make that happen. But at the end of the day, like you said, like this was part of it. If it's on the TNT marathon, I'm watching it.
Of course.
it's on. It's definitely been a fun discourse though, and I've kind of enjoyed this aspect of it.
The whole studio drama of it, the whole like wondering about who did make the choices about what to keep and what to cut, and who did make the choice about bringing Palpatine back, and what they like, what things they kept in the script and didn't. How much of Rose Tico's role was apparently cut. Mm-hmm. You know, like all that stuff. It's like that starts to get really. I mean, for us. That's been the, you know, domineering and dominating topic of conversation on our text chain. It's really fun to think about and go like, you know, I don't know. It's dramatic.
Now, I've got a hot and fresh that I just thought of while we were discussing this.
Oh, boy.
What if Disney purposely made an unsatisfied ending to this saga so that in the future they could remake the entire saga?
I've thought about that.
Do you think
there will be like the sequel trilogy, the Lucas treatments,
if they just release it, it's only on Disney Plus? Is how
I'm
you
saying
see
seven
it.
I'm prime, saying eight they're prime, recast,
and prime.
I'm saying they're recasting all nine of them and making it into three long movies.
Oh.
Well, that sounds more on par with your usual hot and fresh content.
There it is. Let
Chris,
us know.
Did you see in the Reddit leak that there were rumors that JJ wanted to split into two movies?
Yes, I felt very vindicated. I felt vindicated.
You're a dyad.
Yeah, I get it. He took my he took my yogurt that afternoon and my idea. I was eating a yogurt and all of a sudden it was gone, and then JJ's eating a yogurt saying this should be
Chris,
two movies.
Chris kept kicking the Roomba kept hitting Chris's foot and he kept saying
bad robot. And all of a sudden JJ Abrams is at the end of Lost. Hey, let us know what you think. Email us droidspod@gmail.com, on Twitter @droidspod, Facebook, The Droids You're Looking For Podcast, YouTube, watch Ryan's play of Jedi, The Fallen Order, Fallen Order on
you
YouTube.
Got it, my man.
There it is. He does a nice little playthrough. It's a delight to watch. Very fun game. Lots of Star Wars stuff has come out recently. And then Instagram @droidspod. We'd love to know what you thought of the movie. Please write in. Loved it, hated it. Neutral on it. Have ideas for your own script. Don't send us anything we don't want on air. Yeah, we'd love to know what you think. It's going to be a fun year with this discourse. I can't wait as time goes on we get more pieces of the actual story. I just hope if it is straightforward, that's fine. If not, though, I kind of want to know what's going on.
People seem to start getting honest, and it's only been out for like 12 days.
Here's the thing.
That's insane to think about.
Disney, to my knowledge, though, has never done like... I know, so there's been the special editions of Star Wars, right? Like, Lucasfilm has re-released movies, but I don't think, to my knowledge, like, Disney ever re-releasing an alternate cut or doing, like, a director's cut of a thing or anything.
They re-released Endgame with an extra scene in it.
Oh, did they?
Oh, they did, just recently. They did.
Yeah, okay. And then I heard in The Lion King...
But it was, like, literally one scene.
The Lion King, still. They did a cut where all the lions are holding walkie-talkies. It's kind of weird. Wow.
Well, on that note...
There's a kind of Aladdin where they got rid of the VO and he's not a replicant at the end.
it's real weird. Yeah,
I like the theatrical cut best, I think, of the original Blade Runner. I like the VO.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's like a better movie.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a hot and fresh.
There it is. For another day. Well,
I'll rewatch it. I don't know.
Onward and upward.
They fly now? I almost said they have jetpacks now.
And that'll do it for the droids you're looking for, Star Wars podcast. What they throw.
Babu.
He's the best.
JJ said, "Where's your yogurt?" And Chris said, "I thought it was lost, but here it is. My name's on it." And he said, and "That says Jackie." And Chris said, "That's my alias."
And then they said, "What are you doing in this office? Get out of here." That was that lost sound. Cool. Remember that sound? Do you think he sneaks? He definitely sneaks that into every one of his movies. Like when somebody sets down like a tea kettle, it goes.
Yeah.
Sure, I think so. I think he does. Boring conversation anyway.
Yowza.